check it out now. No doubt now.
Friday, June 24th, 2022. It is the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander, thank you so much for joining us today for tennis's third major of the year. Obviously, the one on grass, tennis's shortest surface season, the grass season, but all was culminating at the championships at Wimbledon, the fortnight at Wimbledon. And what I love about doing these tennis pods so much, and we have committed to, in addition to our Megapod and guessing lines during football season, to doing all the tennis slams, because this is, for me, again, the ultimate nirvana, because honestly, there are two people on earth that I would like to talk about this subject with always, and they are kind enough to join us once again on this podcast. From England, you can follow him on Twitter at Tennis Ratings. He does great stuff for Betfair, the finest tennis handicapper, to which I owe tons of inspiration for doing it myself. Dan Weston is with us, fresh off a magical cruise through the Mediterranean. How you doing, Dano?
Yeah, I'm good, Gil. Yeah, really enjoyed the cruise. Now ready for Wimbledon.
Oh, I. By the way, can I say the name of the cruise ship? Should I give them a plug?
Feel free. Give them a plug.
What is it? I don't want to botch it. The Wonder. What is it?
Wonder of the Seas from the Royal Caribbean.
The Wonder of the Seas, which will be in Cape Canaveral, Florida, you said in November, for those who are interested.
So they do European season from I think, May until November, and then American season, Caribbean season from there onwards for the next few months as well.
I love it. A Caribbean season. I love that. Sadly, it's in the middle of our pro football season, so I'm out of luck, as this gentleman probably is out of luck. The other one here that I'd love to talk to about this subject, and others, by the way, which I probably start with, you follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. He is co-host of both the Deep Dive and NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast, which he does respectively with his buddy Andy Molitor, and then with Sarah Perlman. It is Drew Dinsick. How you doing, Drew, from his backyard in Long Beach?
Yeah, no complaints here.
No complaints here.
Funny, as long you guys are talking about boats, I'm going boat shopping this afternoon. So you know, it's not really. But, what a great draft! The NBA draft was unfreaking believable last night. Best one of the best nights I've had as a sports bettor, without question. And you know, what do you do when you have a night like that?
You get buy up a
the
boat.
Next morning. You know, you get up the next morning, you start grinding tennis. That's right back into the grind.
So let me explain to people, since there's going to be a lot of people who are just tuned here for tennis. I know Dano is probably like, wait, what is this? So last night we had our National Basketball Association draft, which typically, from a betting perspective, takes a huge backseat to our National Football League draft, which is a betting extravaganza for those of us who bet that kind of thing. At this year's draft, the reason that Drew is beyond belief happy today, and as he mentioned, slightly hungover, is that this year's draft, which, you know, up until about a week ago was very quiet as typical, then within the last 5 or 6 days, there was a monumental move on the person that ultimately did get drafted number one last night. But about a week ago, he was 20-1. 4 days ago, he was still double digits, 12-1. And then there was this unbelievable dip in his price through the year. Through the week. His name is Paolo Banchero from Duke. He ends up being the number one pick of the NBA draft, goes to Orlando. And I gave a passionate speech on Monday as to why I thought he would be the first pick of the draft. Drew made out like a bandit, bet, I'm going to guess, more than I did on this even, and I bet a lot. We also have a friend, Bill Krakenberger, who made out big time. But anyway, it becomes one of the greatest betting case studies and results in probably both of our betting lives. It's up there. It's one of those ones you'll remember for years to come, wouldn't you say, Drew?
Oh, yeah, without question. It would be like if the market was looking at this Wimbledon field and priced Djokovic at 20-1. It was a 50-50 chance, man. He should have been a pick 'em, and you could have got it at just an absurd price for going on a week. And it just so happened to be the most liquid market in all the draft too, which was just on, you know, I don't know that that's going to come along again. I hope it does, but that was something to see.
Guy at Caesars Sportsbook said the market for the number one pick in the NBA draft ended up at Caesars. I don't know about other books, but at Caesars, 10 times the handle for the NFL draft number one, which is mind numbing. Right, you could never have predicted that.
I definitely wouldn't have.
Yeah. I'd have lost a lot of money on that.
That was an upset. Yeah, that was an upset.
Anyway, Dan, I'm sure this was riveting to you, but otherwise, but like,
love it.
Yeah. So now, extra liquidity in my accounts to dunk on tennis. So yes. I'm in good shape.
And I have Ole Miss this weekend at 100-1 in college baseball.
Oh, Jesus!
For an amount of money that will make William Hill notice if I win.
Uh oh.
Yeah. Let's just put it that way. So between the Warriors, Banchero, and this could be the greatest betting stretch ever. And as you point out, and now there's Wimbledon, which is like, oh my God, and the tennis tournament hasn't even started. And so let's get to that. The draws are out. Unlike the last time, Dano, you weren't able to be here for the French draw. Drew and I were actually doing this podcast while the draw came out for the French.
Yeah.
And if you recall, that was the draw where Tsitsipas basically got his own half.
Yeah.
And so we were mind blown while this was coming out. This one, and I want to start on the women's side because I think what I saw today on the men's draw triggered a bet for me on the men's side. But I want to start on the women's side where, I'm surprised you're surprised. We'll see. Women's side, my real quick reaction to the draw, and we'll get yours immediately, which is quarter one with Iga Swiatek, pretty favorable for Iga. I have a 9-1 ticket from the night that Ash Barty retired. I was looking for any stray Iga French Open numbers. I didn't find any of those, but I did find a 9-1 at Wimbledon. She's never won on grass before. Her quarter looks pretty good to me. Quarter four going all the way to the bottom. I think Maria Sakkari should be telling herself, or her camp should be telling her, look, we should be able to win this. Then I'd say quarter two going back is a really difficult one. Simona Halep's quarter, if you will, for lack of a better term, is even though she's not seeding, it isn't her tournament. It shouldn't be called her quarter. I think that's a really difficult one, and I think quarter three is pretty difficult. I'm curious, Dan, we'll start with you, what your reaction was to the women's side.
It's so interesting because obviously Swiatek just hasn't played a lot on grass at all. She hasn't played the warm up events, and for me, I think that makes it a real risk for anyone her at short prices over the coming couple of weeks. So I had a look at the prices on Betfair at the moment, and she's 2.84, pretty similar pre-draw. And in that quarter one, you've got some threats. I do think she's had a kind draw for sure. Historically on grass, someone like Muguruza will challenge her, push her. Rybakina maybe at a big price. Andreescu potentially, Hegler, if she's playing well and fit, that could be some options for challenging her. Some tough opposition there potentially, but I think she's going to be pretty happy with her draw.
Yeah. And by the way, just let me interject for those listening, American audience listening. When Dan says short prices, by our parlance, what he means is a long price opposite based on the fraction system. But I'm with you completely. I think anybody jumping in right now on Iga for the tournament in our betting parlance, plus 150-ish, I just don't think you make that bet. You just don't make that bet. Yeah. What did you think about the Simona Halep quarter number two there? That seemed really competitive to me.
Yeah, and interestingly, Halep has barely played on grass at all over the last couple of years prior to this year, where she played a couple of warm-up events. I like Halep in terms of but she actually got pretty good numbers on away from clay this year, which is not always the case. But obviously we've got the injury doubt on her from Bad Homburg, so that's something of a red flag. Although we'll wait to see how she kind of maybe plays in that first round game against Machova, which is a tough first round game if you're going to
She has, of course, Katie Bolter, who's been playing very well in that. She does have Amanda Nisimova. perhaps most prominently, Coco Gauff, who has been playing great tennis, is in there. Coco Gauff, by the way, with the exception of Ann Shapur, the shortest shot beyond Iga Swiatek. And then there's Serena. What do we do with Serena? Do we have to give her any credence here going for her 24th slam? Any credence at all, or is this just a Tiger Woods on the wrong course kind of thing now? Even though this would be the right surface for her, I guess. Bad analogy.
Yeah, I have an opinion on all Please. This, I guess. Please. So I'll jump in.
Yeah.
I think the draw was a little not as imbalanced as the men's French Open, but I do think all of the dangerous players outside of Ons Jabeur ended up in the top. And I think Q2 is the kind of the quarter of death on the women's draw. Basically, every player with a high enough ceiling to really give it to Iga, kind of sitting in that Q2. So Iga, if she comes out of Q1, is going to have a very, very challenging semifinal head-to-head at whoever emerges. Now, that player may have fired so many bullets to get there that Iga can dispatch them and make a final here. But I share Dan's concern and skepticism about Iga's lack of experience on this surface. I don't think her game especially lends itself to being a strong grass player. And I think Iga's camp's decision to have her basically, you know, more or less throw up the white flag for grass season was probably strategically good. Like, she'll get some reps on grass this year, but it's not, you know, she's not going for a calendar slam or anything. She's going to be the world number one easily for the next, you know, year in time. And so saving up some of her bullets and then going for a U.S. Open, I thought was very, very, you know, potentially, like, I'm assuming that's what they're doing. I thought that was strategically smart because she can and should be a massive favorite to win the U.S. Open.
Yes.
Slower hard court. That should be, you want to run it back all the good feelings about how easy it was that Iga won the French Open. Like, save your bullets for the U.S. Open. I don't think Wimbledon's your time to go after this with aggressiveness.
Completely agree. Completely agree with that.
I am also with Dan that there are a number of potential challengers in Q1 that are going to make for tough outs. The one that I circled for based on price was Andreescu, just because she has a slam in her career. Like, she's proven that she can find a speed, you know, she's proven that she can find a level on, in a slam pressure environment that is good enough to beat Iga head to head. Surely. And I think her price is pretty favorable to come out of the first quarter and really, frankly, out of the top half because of what we mentioned. Like, quarter two is the quarter of death. Serena, as you kind of alluded to, was sort of the landmine in the draw. So whatever quarter she landed in was going to automatically make that a challenging quarter. And she had played warm up doubles with Ons Jabeur in Eastbourne, but only really played those two matches. And I watched a lot of that tennis, and more tennis doubles than I've watched in years, just to try to get some read on it. And Serena looked like she was in really quite good shape. Not the kind of fitness level that you can win seven matches over 2 weeks, but a fitness level that she's going to make some seeded player miserable in the first week. And so I think, penciling her into week two is not crazy. 16-1 for the tournament is crazy. I don't think you can expect her to be able to, you know, not play a tournament in a year and then come in and find form that, you know, that can persist for a 2 week stretch. So my general read on Serena is she's going to upset some players with hopes of going deep in this tournament, but then ultimately fizzle out in week two. And I'm circling Pliskova as a victim here. Coco Gauff could be in trouble if they meet head to head in a quarterfinal here. But Coco Gauff again got kind of the worst of the draws of anyone who was considered. Live outside of the top two and Iga and Ons. Coco got the worst of it.
And by the way, I feel the need just to interject this. I think I know the answer. But the reason for Jabeur and Serena pulling out of the doubles effectively was a Anshabor knee injury, you completely believe that that's just the week before Wimbledon, I want to take a few days off the injury kind of thing?
I mean, I hope. Yeah. I got a lot of Anshabor in like the 33-1 range. So I'm hoping that that was precautionary. She hasn't shown any signs in anything I watched where I was concerned about her fitness for sure. You never know. I mean, I think injury, you know, we haven't talked much about the bottom so far.
Let me ask you about that. Finish your thought anyway.
Okay. I was just going to say, you know, injury scares me more than anyone she has to run into between here and the final.
Oh, so that's interesting because I'm just going to throw out some names in her draw and I'll get you. Sure. And you're showing no fear whatsoever, but I'll just throw out some names. Danielle freaking Collins.
No fear.
Madison Keys.
She'd give her a match. Keys can make a quarterfinal, but I think she ultimately gets beaten straight. Yeah.
Now we have a bit of a different opinion on Emma Raducanu. You do not believe her to be a threat.
I don't know. I mean, it's okay. Same. Yeah, she's obviously she kind of burst onto the scene at Wimbledon last year. People remember her U.S. Open title run, but her Wimbledon run was pretty special.
Yes, it was. And she gave Iga, by the way, who's won 35 matches in a row, I should point out, 52 of 54 sets, 6 titles this year. Emma gave Iga a pretty good match. People remember Samsonova taking a set off of Iga. But Emma was pretty, pretty freaking good in that match. And I remember being impressed, like, oh, okay. Maybe this isn't some blip. By the way, the one name that I haven't mentioned in the draw, which is probably the biggest one, if you go into her data, her grass court data, and again, grass court data not as robust as other services, but Angelique Kerber, and I think you've pointed this out as well, Drew, and we'll bring in Dan for this as well. Her grass court numbers, 12 months, 6 months, however you slice it, are spectacular. Dan, I'm not sure how you feel about any of these threats to Shabor.
Yeah. First of all, I agree with Drew in that injury, I think, is the biggest threat to Jabeur. And it's interesting to see that on the Betfair market, her price is now the lowest that it's ever been. So the Betfair market is not remotely spooked about this injury issue at all. She's been well supported, and so they're not concerned. I think, peak Kerber, you would say probably would be a bigger threat than most in that third quarter. I'm also on the anti-Raducanu position. I just can't get behind a player who has won 54% of service points on hard or indoor hard this season. Yeah. That's just nowhere near good enough. And what do you need to do well on grass? You've got to serve well. You've got to serve consistently. And I think it's asking a great deal of her to turn that around in the short term.
Bottom draw.
Yeah, agreed.
Oh, bottom quarter. Do you agree with what I said about this earlier? Is that if I'm Maria Sakkari's camp, and she has not had a tremendous stretch here of tennis of late, and I'm like, okay, well, there is Belinda Bencic, if I've got the right draw here. Anna Kontaveit is the high seed in that quarter. But Belinda Bencic is in there. Beatrice Haddad Maia, my girl, Drew. She's she's in there as well, and she has just had a spectacular run. And then Elena Ostapenko can't be overlooked either. But if I'm Maria Sakkari's girl, I mean, isn't this like okay? Like all these players, if you are as good as we think you are, shouldn't she get out of this, or is she just not that good enough to do that?
I'm going to go with B. I don't mind putting a line through Sakkari and Kontaveit here. Your top two seeds in this draw, to me, are upset special candidates. Sakkari is a weird one because for all of her tools, all of her strengths, she should be one of the best grass players on tour, but it just has never manifest. And she also has this weird thing going where the further she goes in these slam tournaments, the more the pressure builds, the more likely she is to come, you know, to succumb to the pressure. And that's not to say things couldn't break well for her here. You know, Anshabor gets hurt, all of a sudden, you know, Sakkari comes through with an easier path than expected to a final and faces someone who is either battle weary, battle worn, or just, you know, not ready for the moment. Like, she could win, sure. It's not crazy. But I guess if Sakari wins this title, I'm going to lose a lot of money. I'm betting against her in the later stages, surely, just because I'm going to be expecting her to ultimately capitulate. She's done it every time she's been there.
Drew, you have Jabeur at 33-1, as I recall.
Yeah. And I again, to kind of the Kerber comment. So again, let's just pretend that something happens to Jabeur. Kerber is my immediate favorite to win Q3.
Well,
like, no question for me. And it was a shame she got put where she got put up against Jabeur in round 4 potentially, and that should be a really good match. Kerber's got the experience on grass, which is something that takes years and years of playing on grass to get, and she has proven that she can get it done on grass. Her game is, you know, sure, her grass game is awesome. Her loss to Alizé Cornet was weird. I don't know what happened there. I don't know if she didn't really, like, if she wasn't really into that match, didn't feel like she needed it anymore. She was ready to kind of move on to Wimbledon or what, but I thought she was going to win Bad Homburg, frankly, that win the whole tournament. So to see her go out was strange. But I don't know that that's a red flag. I think ultimately Kerber goes down to Jabeur, and I think, but I think, let's say it's Sakari Kerber as a semifinal, just for the purpose of making a price. I would personally bet Kerber at any dog price there. I think I would make her a decent favorite over Sakari at that stage of a tournament like this.
Oh, dog approves. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, dog likes the underdog in Kerber. Yeah. That's where you get.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, maybe Dan, do you have a differing opinion on Sakari's chances here?
Yes and no. I can go with you certainly for the sort of latter stages, but she has, like, probably the biggest gift first week that you could ever wish to see. And you look at Q4 and you think, okay, Ostapenko, Bencic, Hadamaya, Kontaveit, who hasn't played a grass warm-up event at all. Bencic has been injured. There's a few ifs, buts, and maybes around a lot of the guys in that quarter. And I think if you're looking at this Q4, this is the quarter where maybe it could open up for somebody. And she might not actually have to play anyone half decent till the semifinal.
Yeah. That was my thinking when I saw this. I'm like, okay, if you just, I don't know why I placed myself, but I'm okay, this is the one. Like, this, we have no excuse anymore in this draw right here, based on everything you just said. So now, if you don't have Drew's 33-1 on odds, if you don't have my 9-1 on Swiatek, I get it. Those aren't available. What's the best bet either in the futures or in the quarter market right now as you see it? Dan, we'll start with you.
Quarter market, I haven't got prices for yet. They haven't been, they're not available on exchange. For me, I like Sakari Q4 because I think it will open up for her. A really, really big price. I'm quite happy to take Swiatek on with someone like Elena Rybakina, or just someone who's actually a competent player with upside who could come through that Q1 where there's not a great deal of really high level players. Just there's a couple of thoughts there. If you've got Jabeur at 33s like Drew has, you're very, very happy with life right now. And obviously Swiatek at 9s, you might want to, you can let it ride, or you might want to hedge part of it in week 2. I don't know, but I think that there's, I mean, I wouldn't want the Swiatek current price that way.
Drew, same question.
Yeah, I think I've seen some of the smaller shops in the UK hang quarter prices, and if those end up going, you know, anything like that hits the exchange, then I'm very much going to have Bianca Andreescu Q1 and top half. I think she can make the final here. Good enough, high enough ceiling. Like Dan's setup of who has the upside, you know, And that for me, the answer is pretty squarely Bianca Andreescu.
You know, I've felt that way about Bianca for so long now that I'm kind of fatigued by it, to be honest with you.
I think the market is too.
Yeah,
which is giving you the opportunity to get her at a pretty cheap price. Like the case against Jabeur is pretty straightforward. She's never done it at the slam level. Like, this would be a maiden slam. Doing a maiden slam at Wimbledon's not easy. Very few players have won their first slam at Wimbledon. Certainly in today's day and age, especially. Will the moment, will the lights be bright on center court in week two? And will she, be able to find what is, to me at least, has clearly been the best grass tennis on the women's tour over the last two seasons now? That's the bear case for Ons. And I think if you're looking for an upside against her, then you're looking for someone who at least has a slam in their pocket, who is playing their best tennis this spring and summer so far. And I think Bianca checks those boxes. So at a long shot price, I think it's worth a look.
All right. Drew, by the way, broadcasting from his backyard. I can't tell you how awesome this is in a morning after NBA draft snapshot. He's going to buy a boat later today, ladies and gentlemen.
That was a joke.
Buy a boat. I know.
I got a lot of taxes to pay, Gil.
Okay, so let's go to the men's side. And I'll give you my first impressions off the top, and we'll see what you guys think. One, Novak Djokovic, the rightful favorite, for sure, as I think we all agree, of this tournament. He didn't get the easiest draw at all here in this bracket in terms of like what you could throw at him anyway. I'm not saying he's going to lose at any point here, but I'm just saying Carlitos, I get it. Not Carlitos' number one surface, but Carlos Alcaraz, don't call me Carlos, call me Carlitos or Charlie Alcaraz. I think I'm going to go with Charlie. Charlie Alcaraz is in there. Both serve bots, Opelka and Isner are in there, which is always fun. Van Rijthoven, I feel the need I should bring him up. Tim Van Rijthoven, who I believe played in 9 ATP career matches and then won a grass court tournament in the Netherlands just a few weeks back. He's a wild card. The home favorite, Andy Murray, is in that bracket as well, in that quarter, as is Jannik Sinner. Anyway, that's all in Djokovic's quarter. I feel like quarter two is completely wide open. I think quarter three seems like a Berrettini Kyrgios head-to-head if Kyrgios decides once and for all in life to be serious about 2 weeks at Wimbledon. That's a huge if. And then here's my biggest macro thing here, and I'm curious because, to me, I didn't have a bet in the outright market on the men's side, but Rafa Nadal is just sitting down there chilling in the fourth quarter, and I got to tell you guys, I'm making a bet on it because I feel like he got as favorable a draw as you could possibly have gotten, and maybe that was predictable, right? Rafa Nadal, who's halfway to a Grand Slam, that hasn't happened since Rod Laver did it in 1969. It's clearly not his primary surface. We all know that clay is. But I don't know, man. That's about as good of a run to a semi as you can get. And you can still get him at about 6-1, 7-1. I'm curious your thoughts, Dan.
I'm not so sure, to be honest with you. I mean, he played a warm-up match at Hurlingham yesterday, I think, against Stan Wawrinka, who commented subsequently and said that the old Nadal was back. But I'm not so sure. We've got the injury doubts. We've got the fact that he hasn't won this tournament for over a decade. These issues don't go away. Now, you're right. He's probably a Sam Querrey shock away from week two. I mean, the old Sam Querrey would have given him a good game anyway. But then you look at week two and you think, okay, well, there's some hurdles. I think that I prefer Cilic rather than Auger Aliassim as the main threat in Q4. Tough opener for Auger Aliassim against Maxime Cressy. And then Dan Evans potentially in round three as well, which is not going to be straightforward at all against a good grass quarter with a pretty partisan crowd, you would imagine. But Cilic should get through. the earlier rounds. And yeah, maybe Nadal in the fourth round would be a good game. We've seen Cilic has obviously done well recently in Roland Garros, and a good few wins under his belt in Queen's Club as well. So yeah, I prefer Cilic at the prices to Nadal, who I just got so many doubts about. He was never that great on grass at his peak. So it's only a fairly open kind of draw that you think he's some form of value.
And Cilic, along with Stan Wawrinka, the only two humans on Earth, I believe, walking that are still playing that have a Grand Slam men's single title, I guess with the exception of Dominic Thiem, as well, besides the big three, right? So there always is that in Cilic's bag. What else were your impressions of those draws right there?
So with Djokovic, I obviously agree with what you said in the intro about him being a very justified favorite, but I'm not sure I like odds on. I'm very unsure of that. I mean, he's only won one title this year, so, and I feel like the market's kind of pricing on the old Djokovic, if you like. But the question is, yeah, he probably could barely have handpicked a better first quarter. He's got a clay court, he's barely played on grass in Alcaraz is the main seed in the quarter. Andy Murray, maybe he might provide a threat, but like you said, I think maybe a couple of serve bots might cause him more trouble than anybody.
Yeah.
You know, if in England, I don't know if you guys are aware, but in England we've had the hottest, driest last 2 or 3 months than we have had for years. So conditions, I would imagine, will be quite fast. And that will obviously help the guys like Opelka, John Isner. I mean, it's barely rained here for weeks or months. It honestly is very, very unusual. And so that will probably dial up the pace a little bit.
Drew, your thoughts on all that?
Interesting tidbit there on the pace. I thought Queens played exceptionally fast. So that kind of checks out. Q1, Djokovic is to lose, no doubt. And his section in particular, like his path to the quarterfinal, he's not dropping a set unless he feels like it. Like that is a very, very straightforward quarterfinal appearance for Djokovic. His quarterfinal opponent is going to be someone of quality, tennis quality, but not someone who can beat him head to head on grass. Everything we said about Iga and lack of experience. She's got 12 grass matches as a pro, but she did win junior title. So it's not like she doesn't know how to win on grass. Alcaraz has 2 grass matches in his career. He dealt with injuries after Roland Garros was over, and he does not have a junior record that suggests he has, some sort of grass form that will surprise us. What makes his game so dangerous plays perfectly for clay, plays perfectly for slow hard court, but I don't know that it plays especially well for grass. His most effective drop shot, is not going to do well against a player like Andy Murray, who's so experienced on grass and, can come to the net, and handle things perfectly well. So I think Alcaraz, expecting him to, surprise, shock the world and make a final or a quarterfinal or a semifinal here, I think is a poor assumption. I don't hold out a ton of hope for Isner or Opelka. Opelka especially, it seems to be just wildly out of sorts.
I'd agree with
last that. Last couple of tournaments, he just hadn't looked like what we saw from the guy in the winter. So if he shows up and plays well, it'll be a little bit of a shocker. Similarly for Isner, Andy Murray, I think, can fight his way to a quarterfinal where he probably gets summarily beaten down by Djokovic. That's kind of my vibe of the first quarter. Quarter two,
wide open,
weakest,
wide
weakest.
Open. Yes,
I actually will disagree with you about wide open.
Oh, who do you like?
I I think he should be odds on to win this quarter. And some of the shops are hanging like 3.7, like plus 270, which is bananas. If you can find a quarter price for Hurkacz Q2 that is north of plus 200, that is the best bet of the outrights, in my opinion. And what he did in Halle was extremely impressive. What he's got right now in terms of timing with serve is awesome to watch. We know he has kind of championship mentality, having taken already a Masters 1000 in his career. Honestly, he beat Federer on center court at Wimbledon, which is something that I think gives you the confidence to, maybe even give Djokovic a match.
Who do you have
in the semifinal?
Who do you have as big as challenger in that quarter? Who would you have?
Honestly, I think the top half of that section, it could be anyone. And I like a guy like Francis Tiafoe, who plays his best tennis and best of five, could surprise. Somebody's going to surprise in the top half of that quarter, and Hurkacz is going to just eat them for lunch in the quarterfinal. That's my general vibe.
You think if Hurkacz takes on like an Ugo Humbert, he would eat him for lunch?
Ugo Humbert doesn't have the quality to go to a semifinal at a slam. Lovely guy, like great player, French brain though. And I think realistically,
brain, is that what you said? Yeah.
You don't know the old joke about the old tennis joke?
French brain.
There's one French brain among all the men's tennis players, and they just share it. see who has it that day. It's not even a good joke. But the Frenchmen's tennis don't scare me really. Ugo could definitely make the quarterfinal here, but I think Hurkacz would be minus 600 against him probably.
Ooh.
Like that would be my guess of what that market would look like. I mean, realistically, I don't really. No one scares me.
Dan, jump in. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they played at Halle. And that was straight sets for Hurkacz.
Do you have a market up by any chance?
Solid. Yeah, it was. He was about 1.5 that day, but I think that's changed a lot because in the last sort of week since then, having done well in that tournament, and also then Humbert losing to Montero in Eastbourne, and the fact that it'll be best of five, I think you probably will get that sort of 1-5, 1-6-ish in a slam against Humbert, like Drew says. And don't forget with Humbert as well that he's only won two of his last 10 matches. He hasn't had a great year at all.
No, he was the defending champion at Halle, wasn't he? Humbert, I believe, going into this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that's testing my memory there.
Same. I couldn't have told you Humbert ever won a title. He won a grass title last year? Wow.
I just check it. Yeah, you're actually right, Gil. Yeah, spot on to beat 11th final. Yeah. And Alexander Zverev on the way as well. But no, I do think that I agree with Drew completely. That's the standout for me. It's open in terms of we're gonna work out who faces him and to win the quarter, but it's for me cut and dried as to him being an overwhelming favorite in Q2. Would you say Norrie was the biggest threat in his bottom half of QT?
Don't ask Drew about Norrie, Dan. We don't do that.
Norrie's on upset. Norrie's on upset alert every round, Dan.
Drew, tell Dan what you call him.
Yeah, scam Norrie.
He calls him Norrie. Never bets on
the guy. Doesn't have a good win in his career. I'd like seriously find his best ever win. I'm just saying now.
Yeah, he beat Basilashvili for a title, right? That's true.
Congrats. Yeah. He got an Indian Wells title that was the softest draw of all time.
Yeah, that's true.
His biggest win was against Bautista Agut in Davis Cup on clay 2018.
I'm fine with that as a characterization.
You will accept that answer. Yes.
Fine with that.
A lot of straight set losses when he's been a heavy dog, that's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of those.
Do you agree with the sentiment that I had before, which is, with apologies to Stefanos Tsitsipas here, that peak Kyrgios, peak Berrettini would be the match there?
Q3 is the quarter of death. Every match in Q3, virtually every step of the way after round one, is going to be must watch. All of those look good. Everything looks good there. Berrettini was a player who I had cautious optimism for when we started the grass cycle. He played his way into form at Stuttgart in impressive fashion. His serve by the end of that Stuttgart title, his serve was unreturnable. And then he backed it up with a really impressive week in London at Queens. I was like watching carefully every one of those Berrettini matches in Queens, expecting that the layoff was eventually going to impact him in some way, that he was going to slip up at some stage, like just get tired even. Never happened. He was incredible that whole week. When the going got tough against Kudla, he found another level in that match. Kudla, by the way, played his best at tennis that I've seen him play in a long time in that match in particular. He kind of treed in Queens in general. But I think Berrettini with a favorable draw, I'm futures for him at this tournament, but he didn't get one. His third quarter is going to be tough. He's going to have tough matches at multiple steps of the way to get to a semifinal here. Kyrgios, Tsitsipas was the best grass tennis match we got this whole season so far. That match at Halle was absolutely awesome. For whatever it was worth, the tournament organizers gave Kyrgios so much leash. Like, they let him get away with wild, wild stuff on court. But in doing so, we got a really great match, which is always fun. The idea that Kyrgios is somehow mentally got it figured out and is going to be able to win seven matches at this tournament is insane. That's a complete farce.
You cannot bet that. No.
No, the leash that he got in Halle on his way to almost winning a title, no chance he gets that here. No chance. And so he'll have a meltdown at some stage.
Sure.
Hopefully not before giving us a super entertaining match against Tsitsipas again. Really want to see that head to head again. Will be just great tennis and entertaining as hell. And Tsitsipas, honestly, is sort of the perfect opponent for Kyrgios in terms of bringing out his best and his most entertaining tennis. So very hopeful we see that. Winner of that, I don't have the draw exactly in front of me. He goes up against Batista Agu next. Is that right?
I'm looking.
Would go up against it likely?
Searching.
I can't remember.
128 for the draw. It's tough to sift through here.
Yeah. So a bunch of those guys in the Tsitsipas section are live, but I think Berrettini ultimately comes through.
Yeah, Bautista
price isn't going to be good enough though to bet it. I don't think.
Yeah, Bautista Agut is in like a Shapovalov little pod.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, whereas Tsitsipas is in the Kyrgios Cressy pod, if I'm not mistaken. Oh no, maybe I have that wrong. No, Kyrgios. Yeah. Kyrgios is in the Tsitsipas pod. So they would meet.
Kyrgios is round three, round four, and quarterfinal. All three of those are extremely tough head to heads.
That's correct.
Can't remember. Who would he play after Tsitsipas if he gets through?
Kyrgios? He would play Shapovalov or Bautista Agut, yeah.
Yeah, I think Bautista Agut's got to be the guy there. So, yeah, I think realistically, Kyrgios probably takes out Tsitsipas, maybe takes out Agu, but Agu is sort of the patient, Iron Man, kind of happy to go five, kind of a player that really frustrates Kyrgios generally. So Agu probably gets him there. And if it's Agu Berrettini, Berrettini is is cleanly through to the semis, in my opinion. But, I think, I don't know, I guess, have you been as impressed with Berrettini this run-up as I am, Dan?
Yeah, no, for sure, absolutely. And I think that if he plays Kyrgios in the quarterfinals, then Kyrgios will have the potential to be quite frustrated by how strong a server Berrettini is and the lack of opportunities he's going to get. Think about wear him down mentally. And I'd make Berrettini a solid favorite probably in that match as well.
Yeah. So I think, I guess where I'm going, draw aside, I had Berrettini as the clear-cut second choice for Wimbledon title after Djokovic. But yeah, with the draw being this tough, I don't think the price is worth betting in now, right now.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm with you there. With you there.
And Drew, you don't like the flyer on Nadal, do you?
I mean, the way the 2022 tennis has gone to this point has been me doubting Nadal and Nadal flushing it back in my face. So I gotta keep playing the bit, right?
Yeah.
Nadal doesn't have a chance here, in my opinion. My Nadal Wimbledon.
That's it. He's winning it.
Is
third slam.
My Nadal. Yeah, Nadal calendar slam this year would just be bankrupt my entire tennis.
Can you imagine 36 years old doing that? Injuries.
No, I can't.
Yeah.
When Nadal was peaking, my highest ever rating for Nadal was, I believe, 2017, after he swept Clay and was untouchable in French Open, right? Going into that grass season, I was high enough on him overall as a player that I thought he should have been the favorite to win Wimbledon, even though it's not his best surface. And even when he was that good, he could not get it done here. So I think the days of Nadal contending for a title at Wimbledon are long gone. And he may make some, you know, he'll have some fun matches in this tournament, surely. He'll make it miserable for some players who are, you know, trying to make their names on grass in the fourth quarter, surely. But I will be kind of leading the charge on Cilic at a dog price head-to-head versus Nadal, if that's your quarterfinal. And I think Cilic should be the favorite for the fourth quarter, even though his last match was not impressive.
So then, will you bet Cilic at a quarter for the quarter?
I didn't love the prices I saw. I would need better than 2-1.
But you will bet Urquats to win the second quarter.
The rest of that second quarter to me looks too weak. And I think, I think overall the men's draw is chalky. I think Djokovic over Hurkacz is a likely semifinal on the top. I think Berrettini over Cilic is the likely semifinal on the bottom. And then I think what looks to be potentially a boring 2 weeks of men's tennis will end with a really, really good final between Djokovic and Berrettini.
Mm-hmm. Berrettini almost got there last year, right?
People will say that because of the scoreline, but that never really felt in doubt watching it live.
I agree with you. It didn't.
You kind of felt like Djokovic was kind of playing with this food for the first set. Gave him one, and then he turned it up, and it was see you later, buddy.
Playing with his food. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Dano, anything to add?
Yeah, a couple of bits and pieces. I just got the Betfair prices up now on my other screen.
Oh, yes.
And someone has placed, I assume it's one person at least, has placed a £26,000 order to back Tsitsipas at 36s, which would be the next price on the first price on the pink side. So someone's obviously very keen about that. And it's just over £1,100 waiting on Hurkacz at 18s as well to back him too. And just under £3,000 at Berrettini at 7.8. So there's a bit of market sentiment there, perhaps. One looking at the kind of head-to-head games a little bit, and one of the oftentimes in these early rounds of slams, you find a match between kind of two guys ranked outside the top 50 who maybe the values in those matches rather than any of the big names. And I don't know if you've followed the Ilkay Challenger this last week, Drew, with Zizou Bergs winning the event and getting a wild card by winning that event. So whoever wins the Ilkay Challenger gets the wild card into Wimbledon. And he beat Sock, Popperin, and Seppi from quarterfinals onwards after qualifying. And he plays Jack Draper from Great Britain, who's done very well in challenge events. In fact, he actually beat Bergs in St. Briac, I think it was, indoors in a final in March. Draper's done very well indoors. But if you look at, and the people, I think the reason why I've highlighted this game a little bit is because being British and being knowing how the British react to this type of thing, he got to the semi-finals of Eastbourne, and he will be getting a lot of coverage in the run-up to the tournament. Now, if you look at the players he beat in Eastbourne, he beat a very out-of-touch Jensen Brooksby. He beat Diego Schwartzman, who's no grass quarter. And he beat Ryan Peniston, who's a very mediocre English player, and was a heavy favourite to do so. So he's hardly beaten the who's who of grass court tennis to get to the semi-final, where he lost to Cressy in the semi-final. The other tournaments, he lost to Rusevori, round two of Queens, and lost in round two of the Surbiton Challenger to Peniston after beating a guy from Britain who was ranked outside the top 300 in the first round. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I think the markets and the media attention will be on Draper for this. And he's playing against a guy who's bang in form, coming in, having won a grass court challenger title. And at the moment, I'm looking at the early prices, and it's about 1.3 on Draper.
Wow.
So, yeah, one to watch, I think, with the market anyway.
I love it.
Love that.
Love it. Have you looked at first round matches at all, Drew? I have not yet.
Only one I thought about betting was there's an interesting up and coming player that's been fun to kind of follow. Taiwanese guy, Jason Tseng. He was a junior champ on both clay and grass, which is one of those like somebody like this. That's like the Belinda Bencic like path, right? Like a player who wins both the clay and grass juniors always catches my eye. Like, whoa, like this guy, you know, there's something there. And he's mostly stuck at the challenger level. Again, Jason Tseng, and he got matched up against, I think, a very beatable British qualifier. And he was about minus 125 on the open end. My number said it should have been closer to minus 200. So Tseng definitely got my attention in round one. And then, you know, outside of that, I haven't gone through the prices very carefully.
That looks a great shot. Just having a look at this now. I mean, Alistair Gray, he's probably barely even challenger level.
Tseng is weird because he elected, instead of taking his game to grass for the run up to Wimbledon, he stayed on the clay challenger circuit. He had mixed success on that. I don't know why he hasn't pushed harder onto grass personally, but I think he does have a level that's a lot higher than Alistair Gray.
Yeah, I'm with you there, sure. That's a great shout as well.
All right. I love it. I think we've all learned that Rafa Nadal is going to make a deep run and torment Drew.
Congratulations on slam number three in 2022. That's right. It's a 30 million-year-old Rafa Nadal.
I'll catch you in 13 days. I'll be like, well, there he is, Drew. There he
Get
is
it again.
Yeah. I love the Orkots, the conviction, for sure.
Yeah. Find that second quarter price. That'll be your best bet pre-flop.
It's going to be awesome. Women's and men's. Can't wait. Wimbledon starts, what are we talking about, Monday England time, yes? Which will be, I guess,
11.
Over. Yeah.
11 a.m. I think it's 3 Vegas.
Yeah, I was going to say, really early in the morning, our time here in the Pacific time zone, I would have.
I got an important question for Dan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What is Dan's opinion on the end of middle Sunday off Manic Monday?
Oh, good question, good question.
Wow. I actually quite like the Sunday off.
I do too. I don't know why they did this.
Yeah, because I don't have any, you know, Sunday feelings in terms of it being a special day or anything like that. I just like the day off to regroup. It's so different to the Grand Slams. And, you know, you have the French Open, which I really hate, the first Sunday start. With Wimbledon, I like it. I like it, the old structure.
Why did they make that change? Why did they get rid of Manic Monday? Just to have tennis every day?
They're trying to ruin the lives of us handicappers, yeah. Man. You know, we need a day off to spend with our families, and Sunday is a great day for that. Like Dan said, you need to regroup right in the middle of the tournament. And boy, oh boy, like what a treat to get Manic Monday, where every single fourth round match is happening on the same day. Like that is it's usually the best day of tennis in the entire calendar year.
I would agree with that.
We don't get it this year. So
yeah,
kind of a bummer.
Dan, what does Betfair say about Paolo Banchero being the number one pick in the NBA draft? Do you have any information on that?
I don't know much about that one.
Oh, man. All right. Well, guys, listen, I appreciate that. Again, there's no one on planet Earth I would rather do this with than you two. Dan Weston, at Tennis Ratings on Twitter, doing his thing for Betfair still. And then Drew Dinsick, at Whale underscore Capper, where, again, you can find him on two podcasts, Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with Sarah Perlman. Gentlemen, I'm sure we'll be in touch during the fortnight of Wimbledon. And I appreciate it very much. Good luck to all.
Cheers, guys. Good luck with everything.
Thank you, guys. Yeah,
best luck.
Gil Alexander, thank you so much for listening. Next podcast, I'm guessing, is a Major League Baseball Q2 derivatives pod. We'll talk to you then.